It sounds great in theory, right? A woman wants a man to open up until a man opening up exposes her own triggers, or until a man opening up kind of exposes her trauma or exposes her weakness. Because a woman can say that she wants it all she wants, but at the end of the day, I think a woman can have certain limitations and restrictions and boundaries around that. I want you to open up, but I want to define what it looks like. I want to define what it sounds like. And
what? if it's controlling?
In a 2-year period of time, I had experienced what many would consider to be two big T traumatic events.
Death, divorce, and taxes. It's the trifecta.
Relationships aren't 50-50. I'm convinced that's one of the biggest lines of crap out there. Relationships are 100-100.
I was about to say they're 100-100. They're not 50-50. You're only going to put half your effort into it? I don't think so.
And I've seen a lot of men go through this. They basically will start out, let's say, I was chivalrous, I was courteous, I was all this, and it didn't work for me, so now I'm
didn't get
negative.
Me in the sack with them.
So let's not forget TLC in there, too.
If all they wanted was you not to be a scrub, you could get by. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was a really low bar. That was a really low bar.
I don't know that that's true, Jake. I think there's a lot more scrubs out there than we want to talk about.
No, meaning if you weren't a scrub, like, you didn't have a real high bar to have to hop over. Like, if all I need is somebody who's not a scrub, great, I'm in.
Well, you would be in. Steven would be in. That's a really low bar, but I think there's a lot of...
Thanks.
I was going to use the F word, but I won't.
For women to understand men more, it's going to take men to understand themselves more. And
oh God, that is such a great analysis. I mean, it really is.
I don't have a complete definition of what masculinity actually is. I think anybody that attempts to define it doesn't truly understand it.
It's no secret that Michelle has been accused of being masculine at times. Okay?
I occasionally find that I have more testosterone than some men that I interact with.
Exactly.
Oh, I love having two men to talk to for once. The information shared in this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. It should not be considered as professional legal advice or a substitute for seeking professional legal advice. I'm Michelle Locke, and this is Love, Lust, Law. Today, we're joined by Stephen Goodwin, co-host of the Full Disclosure Conversations podcast. Stephen brings a wealth of knowledge, insight, and real-world perspective to the table, and we're incredibly excited to share a conversation with you. Stephen, thank you so much for being here and being willing to open up, explore ideas, and engage with us and our audience. We've got some, I think, thought-provoking topics lined up for today, but as always, we're all about authentic conversation, so we'll see where this goes. So let's get into it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So first of all, thanks so much for inviting me on. This is the first invitation I've received since I started this journey. So I was very excited. Interesting that my first formal invitation comes from Love, Lust, Law. So I view it as, I guess, an honor. And also, I don't know. I don't know how to describe this invitation. It's kind of surreal to a certain degree. So I started Full Disclosure Conversations because, to your point, there's a lack of authenticity. There's a lack of genuineness in a lot of conversations, not only in a lot of conversations, but in a lot of relationships. And a little bit about my backstory, just the condensed version. 2021, I stood by my father's deathbed in a hospital in Virginia and watched him take his last breath and watched him pass away during the height of the pandemic. And that sort of began my journey of healing, that began my journey of grief, that began my journey of sorrow. And it set me on a path, I would say, even of self-discovery. Fast forward a couple years later, I was married during that time, but a couple years later, 2023, I experienced another death. This was the death of my first marriage, and it was a marriage that was 15 years in length. And so in a 2-year period of time, I had experienced what many would consider to be two big T traumatic events.
Yep.
And
death, divorce, and taxes. It's the trifecta.
Those are the three things in life that are certain: death, divorce, and taxes. We would like to avoid all three if possible, but obviously that's not the case. Interesting thing is, I thought I was good, right? I thought I was healed. I thought I was in a place for a relationship. I thought I was in a much better place. And so What I started noticing is I started noticing the need for conversations. These conversations that I'm having are conversations I wish I had when I was younger. I can't say they would have kept me from making the mistakes that I did. I can't say they might have helped me be further along than I actually am. But they're designed to create a community and space specifically for guys where we can take the conversations that we're afraid of having. I heard someone say the magic is in the work that we're avoiding. And I would also say the magic is in the conversations we're avoiding. And so these conversations are attempting to tackle all of those conversations that we're afraid of. And it's basically an invitation for men specifically just to come out of hiding and to come out of the shadows and actually live their most authentic selves.
I think it's really fascinating that you dive into this because I think there's a lot of things that males have been expected over time to just avoid, to be fair. Mm-hmm. Just the stoicism, the sort of, you know, the strong silent type. What are the things that for you in your own relationship or therefore what you were feeling as a void between, let's say, you and your father, things that you didn't necessarily address, how did you end up adapting that to the format that you now use and go out there with the mission statement?
It's a good question. So I grew up very much a people pleaser. I grew up performing. I grew up chasing attention and affirmation. I suffered and struggled through fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, and they were things that I carried with me subconsciously. And I am very much a verbal processor. Some might call me an overthinker. Some might call me even an overtalker. I'm okay with both of those designations. It really doesn't matter to me. I'd rather overshare and be authentic than undershare and be fake. And so for me, I'm able to have dialogue about my father because obviously he's passed away. So there's a certain level of comfort there. If he was still alive, it might be a little bit of a different story. Same thing goes with my first marriage. I mean, obviously she's still alive and she recently got remarried herself. So where I'm taking these conversations is, especially for myself, I'm approaching it in the form of being a student, right? I am trying to become a student of myself. I'm trying to learn myself. I haven't determined if it's a discovery or a rediscovery of myself, if it's an invention or a reinvention of myself. But I'm realizing that in order for me to understand who I am, in order for me to understand my purpose, in order for me to understand my worth and my value, I cannot do that in isolation. I cannot do that alone. And so I am inviting men into the circle and into the conversation because I think in order for us to truly become who we are wanting to be and for us to truly understand our worth and our value, we need other people, right? We need this accountability. We need this responsibility in order for us to do what we're called to do. Someone asked me before I made the decision that I recently did, and they said, how would your life be different if you started understanding and appreciating your worth and your value? How would your choices be affected? How would your decisions be affected? And the decision that I recently made, it was not an easy decision. The outcome that is most likely going to take place is not even the outcome that I wanted, but I am realizing the importance of self-care and self-love. And at the end of the day, no one's going to show up and do the work for me. I have to do the work myself. And so this is just me trying to do the work while having other people side by side with me.
Well, and Stephen, you and I have talked offline a little bit, and so I know a little bit about what you're going through right now. And what's interesting is how the perception of sometimes behaviors when someone gets the blame can dictate to some extent your actions and what you do. And something you and I talked about in particular was those people aren't waking up in your shoes and aren't living your life and don't have to deal with the consequences of the decisions you make, but yet they have no problem telling you what to do. And so what have you done or tools are you using to help kind of silence that and really put that to the side and do what is right for you because you're the one that wakes up every morning and has to deal with it?
You know what? It's a good question, and it's a struggle that I deal with every day. There's a certain level of guilt. There's a certain level of shame that I still experience. There's a certain level of, what the hell did I do? Did I make the right decision? And there's always three sides to every story. There's your truth, there's the other person's truth, and then there's the truth. And I think one of the greatest things that I do myself is not even focus so much on what my truth is, right? Because I think so many times we can focus so much on ourselves being right or ourselves winning that we lose sight of what the ultimate truth really is. And so what I'm trying to understand, and this is even where my faith comes in. I was having a conversation with someone today, and he quoted a verse that simply says, you will know the truth and the truth will make you free. And so for me personally, it's very easy to get caught up in other people's opinions, even if you're not hearing them. You know, people are talking, you know, people are saying things. I've seen different glimpses that lets me know that there's a network of people that are talking about me, that are talking about my decision. And that's a very difficult place to be in, especially because you know both sides of the story aren't being heard. And there's this propensity that we have to want to defend ourselves. There's this inclination that we have to want to prove ourselves as being right. The biggest thing that I'm having to overcome is in that it's very easy to play the victim, right? It's very easy for you to be victim to other people's opinions, other people's conversations that are being had behind closed doors that you're not even being a part of. And so I have to wake up every morning and navigate the waters of, okay, what is the truth that I need to recognize? And how do I need to show up for myself? Because at the end of the day, to your point, no one is waking up in my shoes. No one had to endure what I endured, and no one had to experience it and walk through it. And you know what? It's like the expression, until you walk a mile in my shoes, you don't have any right to even come to the table. But I think it was Aaron Rodgers on the Joe Rogan podcast who said, never accept criticism from somebody you wouldn't take advice from. Right. And I think that that's so incredibly important. And so I am very much in that place right now where you can criticize me, you can judge me, you can accuse me, you could do all of what you want. But at the end of the day, there's something of greater worth and greater value that I'm discovering right now. And that is security. And that is security that I have both in myself and for myself.
You know, it's one that's a great line from Aaron Rodgers, whether you like him or not. It's a great line for a couple of reasons. But it's true, as we, and I think the benefit of like these types of conversations is maybe for some of the younger people to hear, because I know my attitude has changed as I've gotten older and gotten more experience about who I let affect me, what I let affect me, and how I let it affect me. And when I was younger, I don't know that I was very maybe cognizant of those actual interactions and what I was allowing to happen. And now I intentionally know how I'm letting things affect me. And I'm learning much more about, one, the power of no, two, the power of boundaries, and three, the power of putting yourself first and your needs first. And it's not a selfish thing. Like everyone, you know, as a woman, and this is where we get in the masculinity conversation here in just a second, but as a woman, we're taught to put everyone else's needs above ours, our spouses, our children, and then we come somewhere bottom after career and everything else. But men, and this is where I want to hear from both you and Jake on this, that's how women are raised, to put everyone else's needs above ours. How are the men raised?
I can say this, is that some of the things that you brought up, Stephen, are really fascinating, because men are just kind of expected to figure it out in a way, right? Generally, we look at our, let's say, fathers or some sort of paternal role model for that. And you see a lot of young people turning online to sort of the manosphere for this kind of stuff, right? Podcasts, primarily, YouTubers, to sort of navigate them through the ethical, moral, and sort of life lessons and sort of framing of how they should conduct their life, right? Maybe religion has a, you know, sort of a lure with that as well. But I think that one of the things that I've noticed growing up, and I primarily was surrounded by women, you know, raised by women, three sisters. And I think that what I found is that women tend to have a community very quickly when it comes to emotional support. They can easily lean on other people without hesitation, without stigma, whereas men have usually never gotten that same capacity to do so. Again, you're supposed to hold a lot of things in, and instinctively you're supposed to know it. You go back to sort of this primal attitude, like you mentioned this, Michelle, in terms of what women's roles are expected to be. Well, men have certain roles as well, but they're not always taught how to navigate through that. And so I think you see a lot of men now sort of lost, looking for community, you know, forming male friendships and not really understanding why they feel a void in their life. But that does mean something. And I think that, you know, shows like yours, Stephen, bring those conversations to the forefront because they're needed. And I think that for women to understand men more, it's going to take men to understand themselves more. And
oh God, that is such a great analysis. I mean, it really is. If men understood their needs more and not only understood them, but expressed them.
Yeah.
Do you know how many women would be like, thank God, like, tell me what you need. Tell me what you want so we can meet somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Women spend half their time, if not more, in relationships trying to get a man to communicate how he feels, how he thinks, and why he does what he does.
I'm just going back to my marriage, and I'm, ugh. It would be so much better if a man just said, hey, this doesn't make me feel valued by you, and here's why. And if my spouse sat down and said, like, it just explained stuff and was just open with communication. It's a whole different experience. Like, it's, but you guys are raised to suck it up, buttercup. I mean, Stephen, you know, is that your experience?
Yeah, but you know what's interesting, though, is it sounds great in theory, right? A woman wants a man to open up until a man opening up exposes her own triggers, or until a man opening up kind of exposes her trauma or exposes her weakness. Because a woman can say that she wants it all she wants, but at the end of the day, I think a woman can have certain limitations and restrictions and boundaries around that. I want you to open up, but I want to define what it looks like. I want to define what it sounds like. And
what?
if it's
controlling, what?
I mean, I won't go on the record of saying that, but Jake looks like he has something that he wants to share with that.
I'm gonna weigh the scale here. Okay. Stability versus vulnerability. Okay.
Yeah.
When you are vulnerable, it does not mean you're any less stable. What you're doing is you're trusting someone enough to confess, to share, to express some of the doubts, some of the things in your mind or in your psyche that either you have yet to formulate into actionable items, or you're sort of weighing this.
Here's my train of thought, because I just go squirrel. How much of it is... Sorry. Jake, you know me. How much of it is with men not sharing? Is it because they don't want it to reflect negatively on their masculinity?
I think,
like, is there some part of sharing too much that makes you less of a man or less manly? Oh, I love having two men to talk to for once.
Yeah, I'll take that. I think it comes down to a couple of things. It comes down to how you were raised, because a lot of men have been trained and expected to suppress, right? They've been taught to ignore their emotions. And I think this is one of the reasons why I like Jason Wilson out of Michigan and the Cave of Adullam. And he's gone viral. He wrote a couple of books. One of his books is Cry Like a Man. Another one is The Man the Moment Demands. But I think it comes down to, we have a skewed understanding of what masculinity actually means. We've allowed culture, we've allowed society, even social media, podcasts, all of these different avenues to define what masculinity is. We've allowed the Andrew Tates and even the Tony Robbins and some of these other guys that we've allowed them to define what masculinity really is without truly understanding. And I think here's something else that I've come to understand that I don't think a lot of women understand. There's a huge conversation and a huge sphere around women feeling safe and women feeling secure. And I think if you can't have a conversation about masculinity and you can't have a conversation about men being vulnerable without recognizing that they need to feel safe and secure with you as well. You as a woman carry a responsibility to make sure that the man feels safe. Because if you're not safe for a man, if he doesn't feel that security from you, then he is going to live behind. He's going to live in the shadows. He's going to live behind lies. He's going to have flexibility with the truth. He's not going to want to open up. He's not going to want to be vulnerable. And if he does, it's going to come with conditions, and it's never going to be the full picture. It's going to be this caricature, so to speak, where you're not even getting the full version because you're not even allowing him to live authentic. And you've created and you've perhaps curated this image of what masculinity actually is. Right? I experienced this recently. Masculinity, driving a truck, having tattoos, knowing how to fix things, knowing how to put things together, all of these different things. And we've defined masculinity according to external variables that we've completely misunderstood and failed to recognize that masculinity is below the surface. And I don't, you know what? I think there's a lot of women that aren't willing to handle that depth, right? They're not willing to handle it.
100% agree. This is so fascinating because I think about it in my own personal relationships, right? And Jake and I have talked about, like, because of my personality and who I am, and I always, as Jake says, I can't, if I had someone handcuff my hands, I wouldn't be able to talk. But for me, it's because of my personality, because of what I do. Like, I want a man to make me feel safe and secure. And until you said that, I don't know that I ever thought about that the man needs to feel safe and secure. It may not be in the same way, but he's got to feel safe and secure with the woman he's with to share, to open, to protect, to do those things. And I think you're right. If they don't feel secure and they don't feel safe, they're not going to share and you're not going to get the authentic person. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's really, okay. Another question. Jake, I'm going to, for once, by the way, Stephen, it's me asking the questions, not Jake.
Let's roll.
So all you do is ask questions. Actually, you just make statements and assume there'll be no questions for those statements. So it's just like written in stone, Stephen. That's how we work.
So what is the definition of masculinity? Oh, grasshopper.
How did I grow up is the definition of masculinity?
No, sitting here today, your definition of masculinity?
The problem is this. Okay.
Objection, non-responsive.
My definition of masculinity comes from confidence, comes from responsibility, comes from protection. All things that aren't necessarily, those could be feminine too, to be fair. Those are all things, confidence, responsibility.
Could also be traits of being feminine.
This is what I'm talking about. So I think that in terms of my views of masculinity, have probably been altered by time, by society, by things like that. Like if someone put me on the spot like you just did in court or on a podcast and asked me to define it.
I'm actually
going to
chat GPT the definition while you're talking.
That's exactly what Stephen's talking about. Like go right to this.
I'm going to ask chat GPT. Let's see what it says. Let's make this conversation interesting.
No, let's do that. But I think that in terms of masculinity, it's, you know, normally you think of when you grow up, masculinity is like head of household. Let's start there, right? A provider, right? Somebody who is safe, secure, a protector, someone who financially is secure, someone who is responsible, will fight for their family, fight for their friends, and be the person you can count on. But as I said before, because time has sort of altered this, none of those things necessarily, I don't believe personally, are true masculine traits. I mean, if you want to go back to sort of a primitive nature on it, but I think probably more apt to answer this question, deflection coming, is Stephen actually, because he's the one who's done the studies.
What's the definition of masculinity?
So here's the thing. And I really
objection,
pray.
Objection, non-responsive.
I pray ChatGPT is not at its at the core feminine. I really pray that. So when you get your definition from it, I pray that ChatGPT is not giving it from a woman's perspective. Okay,
it's so what up. Is? We'll see.
Okay, so let me tell you this. Right, I don't have a complete definition of what masculinity actually is. I think anybody that attempts to define it doesn't truly understand it. I think the problem lies when we try and define it rather than when we try and live it, right? When I think of masculinity, I think of masculinity as being centered around identity. It's centered around responsibility. It's centered around accountability. It's centered around humility. I think those are core principles because we've defined masculinity by, again, external variables, right? And I think we do ourselves a disservice. Women do themselves a disservice. Men do themselves a disservice when they try and define it, right? I don't think masculinity was ever meant to be defined. I think it was meant to be lived. And the only way that masculinity can be lived out is, number one, when a man understands his identity. Number two, when a man is willing to engage in community. Number three, when a man is willing to give himself to accountability. And number four, when a man is willing to take responsibility. I think those are four principles that focus on the heart of a man, focus on the community of man, focus on the lifestyle of man, rather than all of these other things that even ChatGPT might want to say.
Okay, so this is interesting. So ChatGPT, we'll go to the traditional masculinity. We'll come back to that one. But we're going to talk about ChatGPT and modern evolving masculinity. And here's what it says. You're actually, I think, going to be surprised. Today, masculinity is being redefined to include emotional intelligence and openness, vulnerability and self-awareness, partnership, not dominance in relationships, accountability and integrity, and respect for others, including women and different identities. It's less about rigid roles and more about character. That couldn't be more in line with what you just said.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's something else that I would say too.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Something else that I would say is, right, I think when we try and define masculinity and femininity, right, they're polar opposites. And I think when you try and have a relationship around the concepts of masculinity and femininity, you eliminate the ability to have partnership. Because you're either, as a woman, you're potentially elevating femininity. As a man, you're potentially elevating masculinity. And I think where the magic occurs is where you're not so much hung up on what masculinity is or what femininity is, but you're actually able to work together as a partnership. You're able to work together because that's been the problem in marriages that I've had, and I'm on marriage number two. The one thing that has been missing is the desire and the willingness to be partners. And when you fail to be partners, then you allow yourself to get hung up on conversations like this and definitions, and you're not able to actually be present and live where you need to be.
So doing divorce law for a living, I can absolutely tell you that I do think that a lot of the breakdown of relationships come because there isn't a true partnership. It is, and this goes back to one of the things, Jake, you and I have talked about, is I don't believe there's any norm for a relationship. Like there is not one standard that makes marriage work for everyone, right? Because we all bring our own unique experiences. We all bring our unique histories. We all bring our unique personalities to the relationships that we're in. And unless you can find that, like, and navigate that happy meeting zone, right, where the true partnership exists and you accept the person that's with you for all of their good, all of their bad, all their vulnerability, regardless of whether it meets some criteria for masculinity or meets some criteria for femininity, if you just don't think about it and do what works well for you all, that's the goal. Every relationship, and this is what I see, is that sometimes you have the most masculine thing to do is stand in the background and let your significant other take the front. And I think that is missed quite often. I think a lot of times some men, and I would like y'all's thought on this, but some men think they've got to be at the front to be the masculine one. Like, it's not okay for a lot of men, and from what I've seen, especially in the South, we got some good old boys that don't want to be in the background while their wife is in the forefront.
I think that it really depends upon each couple, because I see a lot of people looking for direction or validation outside. Like, I, you know, grew up in 90s hip hop. You'd hear songs like, I want a real man. I need a real, like, what is a real man?
I was thinking Shoop.
That's what I'm getting to. Salt and Pepper actually provided a soundtrack.
In a really nice video that I remember.
No, they had style, grace, and popularity back then. They really knew
their stuff. They could drop it like it was hot.
They could,
and
well
they
said,
did
Michelle,
in that video.
Well said. We're dating ourselves here. Sorry, Stephen. But
poor Stephen's like salt and who?
Salt and who?
Not the kitchen condiments.
I mean, let's not forget TLC, because there's no scrubs. The scrub is a guy that can't get no love. So let's not forget TLC in there too.
Yeah, but technically, like, that wasn't much to, like, overcome. Like, if all they wanted was you not to be a scrub, you could get by. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was a really low bar. That was a really low bar.
I don't know that that's true, Jake. I think there's a lot more scrubs out there than we want to talk about.
No, meaning if you weren't a scrub, like, you didn't have a real high bar to have to hop over. Like, if all I need is somebody who's not a scrub, great, I'm in.
Well, you would be in. Steven would be in. That's a really low bar, but I think there's a lot of...
Thanks.
I was going to use the F word, but I won't. I think there's a lot of probably scrubs. And I will say, conversely, there's probably a lot of scrubs as relates to being a woman. Like, we're not all catches.
You have a phrase, you know, like, it's like, own your shit. Like,
you're own the first your stink. To, own your
own
stink.
Own your stink. Sorry, I misquoted you.
I'm trying to curse less. Have you not noticed?
I actually haven't. But I will say this, is that... When you look at this too, and Stephen, you probably traveled a lot of miles when it comes to these conversations. And I know that you've probably had people, I'd assume, that you've had to kind of coax into this a little bit, right? You take them on a path that's not always the most comfortable. What are some of the ways that you sort of, you know, for lack of a better term, disarm a lot of your guests and people who may not speak about this in daily life, but they're somehow going to do it on a podcast?
And they do it well on your podcast. Like, you get them to talk. I was impressed.
So the interesting thing is, I actually haven't had to coax anybody. The reason is because there's two different things that I look for when I invite somebody to a conversation, and that's height and that's depth. I want somebody who has maybe achieved more than I have or is in a place that I want to be, right? I want somebody that has depth. And so before I reach out to somebody, before I send them a DM, I will review their content. And a lot of who I have on, I mean, their connections that I develop purely through Instagram. It's purely through seeing their reels, watching some of their content. The gentleman that I had on today was the same thing. But I actually haven't had to coax or disarm. And the reason for that, right, is because it's not so much about disarming my guests as much as it's about disarming myself. I have to be willing to approach it from humility. I have to approach it. And that's why in a lot of my reels, you won't even see me talking. You won't even see my face. And there's a couple reasons for that. Number one, because I've been told my content is cringe. I've been told my content is not authentic. I've been told my content is not genuine. And some of it I took to heart.
Who's telling you this nonsense?
So interestingly enough, the one person who I wanted the support from the most, and the one person that I needed support from the most, is actually probably the biggest critic and the person that is probably the biggest cynic. And I mean, I'm married now, so obviously you can read between the lines and tell.
Yeah, I know exactly
from
who it is.
Yeah. So that's where it came from. And so, but there, I, so here's the thing.
Who needs enemies when you got friends like that?
I mean, yeah, there's the whole concept of frenemies, and you know, I don't need
no frenemies in my life. No thanks. Life's too short to have backstabbing. No. You know what's around.
The reason why I have other people on is because I want to approach it. And if you've gone to my page, you're starting to see videos from me a little bit more. And I'm very intentional on what I put out there as far as me speaking. But I want to always approach it from the standpoint of being a student. So when you ask me what the definition of masculinity is, I don't ever want to approach it from the standpoint of an expert, because if I try and approach it from the standpoint of an expert, or if I think I'm an expert on what masculinity is, then I actually know nothing. I'm just revealing my ignorance. I'm just revealing my own pride, my own arrogance, because that comes back to humility and integrity. And so the reason why I have other people's faces on there, the reason why I have their voices, is because I am approaching this from a standpoint of, number one, I'm a verbal processor, but number two, I want to learn, right? I want to be a student. And I think this whole space would be a whole lot better if men and women viewed themselves as students rather than experts, and truly took, as you mentioned, Michelle, you talked about the person that's in the background. I'm trying to approach it from a standpoint, and I'm not an expert in this, but how low can I go? We're not going to throw up a limbo pole. We're not going to do anything like that.
How low can you go?
But that's how I approach it. I approach it from a standpoint of, I want to try and be a man of humility, and I want to be a student and let other people. And that's the thing. Like, it's tough to get a gauge on a minute and a half to 3 minute reel that's on Instagram, right? You got to get the full conversation. And I think a lot of judgment gets passed based on, you know, TikTok attention spans or Instagram attention spans. And if you really want to understand the height, if you really want to understand the depth, you got to listen to the whole conversation. But that's where I'm at. I want to learn. I want to become better. I want to do better. And as a result of that, you know what? I am inviting people on, mental health coaches, pastors, leaders, nutritionists, personal trainers, all of these different people that I'm having on, because it needs to be a holistic approach. And we've spent so much time dividing it into parts that we've completely missed the unifying factor.
Interesting.
Michelle has been labeled as dude adjacent. Okay.
Labeled me as dude adjacent.
People are man talking, adjacent. Michelle. People are talking. It's not just me, it's other people. Other people, when I plant the idea in their head. So basically, Michelle has sort of grown up in a very competitive, domineering, responsible, aggressive world, becoming a lawyer. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's no secret that Michelle has been accused of being masculine at times. Okay?
I occasionally find that I have more testosterone than some men that I interact with.
Exactly. Stephen, if you see a woman like Michelle, powerful, responsible, really doesn't need a man, to be fair, in nope. that capacity, or if she was dating women the same way, she wouldn't need a partner, let's say.
Nope.
So that being said, is that when you bring people into this sort of mix and sort of get them to break down, like Michelle, you'd think would be the kind of person that you could go to, you could confess to, you could feel vulnerable around, because she is strong, responsible, and self-assured. But then you'll find other people where they want to be vulnerable with their partner, but they're not like Michelle. You know what I'm saying? They have their own vulnerabilities. They have their own sort of issues that they need to work out. How do you navigate these conversations when people have to go out there and say, well, how do you choose the right partner for you if you want to find someone who is sort of going to match your energy or vibe with on this level in terms of being able to express and explore your masculinity through your partner? How does that work?
How do we date the right one?
Yeah, well, in terms of understanding and unlocking who is the right one to date for you just based on your masculinity, if that makes sense.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Jake, you always ask the tough questions.
It's a good question. It's a question that I don't fully have the ability to answer because I don't have a handle on it. I don't have, right? I'm not a dating expert. I mean, some people might look at me and you divorce after 15 years, remarried, and now that marriage is potentially going to end. So why on earth would I take advice from you? How on earth could you speak intelligently or confidently about it? But I think for me, one of the greatest things that I have to look for in a partner is something that I have to find in myself first. And I think that's where the conversation begins. I think we spend so much of our time wanting to find the right person. And we want to find the person who meets all of our criteria, checks off all of our boxes. But at the end of the day, we fail to recognize, or we fail to ask the question of, who do I need to become in order to attract that partner? Not only that, but who do I need to become in order to sustain that relationship? Because God forbid that person shows up and they've done the work and you're not ready for the relationship because you haven't put in the work yourself. You're not secure in yourself. You're not stable. You haven't worked on your character. You haven't worked on your integrity. You haven't worked right. And we define it based on personality and we define it based on expectations. And for me, right, if I was to get back in the dating world, and which the thought itself is scary as hell. But
no thanks,
if
I'm out.
Yeah, it's peace like out. You know what? Maybe I'll just, you know, go Shia LaBeouf and, you know, get amongst monks and just go into Tibet.
Anything emulating Shia LaBeouf is probably a bad idea.
I was right going to say that those optics we may want to change.
Those optics
those a
are not
bit.
The optics we want to know. Because then you're going to be in a bar.
Stay out of jail, Stephen. Please stay out of jail. We don't need you in jail.
But you know what's interesting, though, about his conversation is I watched him on John Bernthal's podcast, and I watched him recently, and he seems to have, he's wrestling. He's struggling right now. He's made mistakes, and he understands that, and I don't want to label him as the standard, but I've seen enough of his content where I can appreciate someone who is wrestling with themselves and is willing to do the work. Because if I look at his recent stuff, other people, that's what I'm looking for. So to answer your question, here's where I would say it. I would say, number one, instead of trying to look for somebody on external factors that they can bring, base it off of internal factors that you're perhaps trying to ignore. Look at yourself and focus on who you're becoming and who you need to be. Because at the end of the day, relationships are mirrors. I will reflect to you who you are. You will reflect to me who I am. And so I have to be willing to do the work. And as far as matching energy, I don't know if it's necessarily about matching energy. I think it's about complementing each other, right? I think it's about recognizing what each person has to bring to the table, and whatever the femininity looks like for her, whatever the masculinity looks for me. Again, this goes back to partnership. This goes back to teamwork. This goes back to relationships aren't 50-50. I'm convinced that's one of the biggest lines of crap out there. Relationships are 100-100.
I was about to say they're 100-100. They're not 50-50. You're only going to put half your effort into it? I don't think so.
Well, that's the point, right? That's the point. And so when you're looking at somebody, right, when you're trying to define it, you have to... I think it's 100-100, not only giving everything that you have, but it's also working on being a whole person, right? You have to be 100 before you can give 100. And I don't profess to be at 100 right now, but I'm working towards that. And I think that's something that is oftentimes overlooked. It's often missed.
But I mean, really, how often does someone actually get to 100? Like, I'm never going to get to 100 because there's always something to grow from, always something to learn from. It's kind of like when you upload to the matrix, like, you know, 90% uploaded. Like, is that the right term, Jake, or am I not? Is that the wrong
close enough. For close the enough. Show, close enough.
Close enough.
Yeah.
So this is what this is. And this is pure, Stephen. This is Michelle in her natural habitat.
This is truly like, yeah. I was really meant to be a boy mom for so many reasons. But no, I'm pretty blunt with my boys, and I've always have been, about the realities of dealing with women. Because, and it's similar to, I think, how girls are raised to be aware of boys only want one thing, right? And I think when they're in their teens, that's probably true. I think 20s, that's probably true.
Stephen, Michelle is a rare breed, and I'll tell you why, is that she has actually instilled what we've all talked about, formulation of masculine traits, into her sons. She's actually been that leader to hold up the level of responsibility, confidence, ethics, respect especially for women too, but also for themselves. Mm-hmm. So she's a very rare case in this way. She's kind of taken sort of her responsibilities in the courtroom to enforce the law and, you know, hammer the law down at home. So
Yeah.
But I also, and here's another good example. When I was raising my stepdaughters, I'll never forget this. This boy came to our house to pick up one of them. And he literally went out to the, pulled his giant truck into the center of the road and honked his horn for her to come out. And I was like, oh, hell no. Hell no. And she was going to go. And I literally stood in front of the door. Her dad didn't do it. I did it. And I was like, you're not going. I'm like, you're not going to get summoned and come out. That young man can come to the door, knock on it and meet us, and then escort you back to the vehicle. But I was like, what? Honk your horn and you come out? Nuh-uh. Not on my watch. Sorry.
I love that. I actually love that. I think that formulates a couple things. One, it shows a lesson in how someone should conduct their own behavior, and two, what they should expect from a partner. And I think that there's a borderline between when people say chivalry is dead. I think chivalry has become redefined. I don't think it's the same as it used to be in some capacity, but I also think that I've seen a lot of men skirt by and just be fucking lazy when it comes to this stuff, to be fair. I think that they don't want to put the time or effort because, well, no, women's lib and whatever, and women doesn't want me to hold the door open for them.
No, we do.
But no, but that's what we've been programmed now to do. Women can do it just as good, if not better than men. So men don't have, and then also you think like, well, if I hold the door open, is she going to think I'm sexist?
I've raised all my boys. You open that door because chivalry to me is respecting the woman you are with. That is chivalry. Chivalry is doing the engaging in behavior that shows your respect and admiration and care for the person you're with. Opening doors. I mean, but I've always taught my boys, open doors. Now, I will tell you this, though. I was also the young girl that was like, I don't need a man to open the door for me. Like, I know I went through that phase saying, I got it. And now I'm like, thank you. So part of it is women growing up and realizing that chivalry is not just a sexist thing. It is not just about man versus woman. It's about showing respect for who you're with.
Stephen, what's your weigh-in on this, on chivalry? Is it dead?
You know what? Before I answer that, I'm gonna flip the script a little bit, and I'm gonna throw a curveball into this whole conversation, because Jake, you have said this, and Michelle, you have said this as well, that you've tried raising your boys to being men and showing them how to treat a woman, right? And that is fantastic, right? That touches on the level of chivalry. But at the end of the day, the other thing that I'm realizing is men will often have as the first example of the type of woman that they want being their mothers. And so my question to you is, as much as you're trying to show them how to be a man and how to treat a woman, what are you showing them as far as what it's like to be a woman and the type of woman that they should attract? Because that's one thing that I've learned. Like, what type of example are you showing them as far as, listen, this is the type of woman that you should want? In other words, would you want your boys dating the version of you that you are right now?
The version of me that I am right now, yes.
Correct. Why is that?
That's a good question. Why? A couple reasons. I think, one, intelligence matters, and I think they should find someone that's intelligent they could have a conversation with. Mm-hmm. Two, I think they should find someone that's independent and can support themselves, because I think that equalizes some of the partnership to some extent. Now, if they decide down the road that the wife stays home and he goes to work, or conversely, he stays home and the wife goes to work, then that, whatever that is, they agree to. But the version of me now is, I'm setting boundaries now like I never did before. Like, in all fairness to your point, I know there were versions of me when they were younger and what they saw with their dad that I would never want them to have in a spouse, nor would I want them to engage in that behavior. That is one of my, when I talk about whether you get divorced, when you wait till the kids are 18, those type of things, I oftentimes will tell my clients that it's Is this the example you want your children to follow when they find their significant other? Because that is what the pattern they will follow. So I don't know that I set the best example at times.
Yeah.
The person I am now, I would be okay with them finding someone like me at this point. I don't know that 5 years ago, like during the just the really, because I got divorced. I got divorced in 2024, left him in early 2024. But 2020 to 2024 is probably not the best version of me, if I was being honest.
Yeah.
So did I answer the question?
You did. Completely. I'm still processing it in my mind, but I definitely think you answered it to some degree. But I think that to your point about is chivalry dead? I think chivalry belongs in the same conversation as masculinity, right? Where it is not something that is defined. It's something that's expressed. It's something that's experienced. It's something that's lived. And for a lot of men, including myself, we didn't grow up with that model. I didn't grow up with my dad opening the door. I didn't grow up with my dad teaching me this is how you treat a woman. And my dad was a pastor. So I grew up in a Christian home. My dad was a pastor until I was 24. So for the first 24 years of my life, I knew my dad as a pastor, but I can't point to him as an example of what chivalry is. I can't point to him as an example of what masculinity is. And so a lot of the things that I learned, I had to learn the hard way. I had to learn trial by error. I had to make mistakes along the way. Is chivalry dead? No, it's not. Here's a big curveball in this. Are there a lot of women that are even able and capable of handling chivalry, especially because we're living in a feminist-driven society, right? There are a lot of independent women. There are a lot of strong women. There are a lot of women who, right, the boss babe, right? Let's describe the whole boss babe era. And
it's
you know
the what? HBIC, head bitch in charge.
Right, you know, it's, and that's the thing. But here, there's a couple of things. Number one, so when I look at someone like Michelle, and you asked a question earlier about, you know, talked about her strengths and embodying, you know, some type of masculinity. And there's a story behind everything. And I would want to know the story. I would want to know, because that's one of the things that I value in a relationship. That's one of the things that I think is overlooked is like, tell me your story. Right.
Yep.
Like, tell me who you, like I you may try and show me who you are right now, but time and proximity will always produce clarity. And you can tell me anything you want in text message, in FaceTime. You can even show me who you want in a dating relationship. But until I get more time with you and until I have that proximity with you, the ultimate clarity that I need is not going to be there. And I have living proof of that right now, where distance is the breeding ground for expectations. And when those expectations aren't met, it leads to frustration and disappointment. And I think a lot of us, we have wrong or misguided expectations. And that goes back to what we've talked about before. What are our expectations? What are our standards? Michelle, you talked about boundaries, but like, what are our standards? What's important to us? What are our values? What is it that's truly worth? And in order for us to have that, right, this goes back to ourselves, you know? At the very heart of chivalry, I think chivalry comes down to a man who knows who he is, who has a security, who has a safety, who has a stability, but know that that man might not have been raised to be that type of guy. He might have had to learn. He might have had to fumble his way through. He might have had to screw up. And as a result, now he's in a place where, you know what, he's trying. But let me say it this way. I think chivalry can be performative if we're not careful. And I want to question motives, because I found myself in that. Am I, is what I'm doing motivated from a place of love and sincerity and honesty? Or am I trying to work for or earn your love or earn your respect?
I got to tell you, they all make me feel not very smart when I'm hearing these conversations. But I love it. I'm just like, wow, I'm... Fuck, not that smart.
Let's put a cap on your intelligence for a second, Michelle. We'll do an IQ test later. But I will say this, is that you bring up such amazing points.
And you really do. They are profound points, not just good points. They are profound points.
When you bring up chivalry, and I think that oftentimes women have been conned into thinking, or maybe not conned, or rightfully so, accurately so, that chivalry is motivation for something, right? It's for, I want your attention. I'm attracted to you. I will do this. What is the sort of bartering system when it comes to this? It's transactionary, right? Mm-hmm. What I've found, at least in the area that I live in Los Angeles, is that what's happened is that now I don't just open doors for women. If I'm there on a door, I'll hold open for whoever's coming.
Yeah, I do. You know I do the same. I'll hold a door open for anyone.
What I find now is happening is that instead of chivalry, what I'm using is courtesy. Okay. I'm just being courteous to people. Mm-hmm. Okay. And anyone who comes into my life. So what happens is that's
well, actually. Well, wait a minute. You're not courteous to me.
Well, it's on a deserve to be courteous basis. It's like a video game. You've got to earn the coins.
Got it. All right.
So we're not there yet.
Trip to LA.
It's a deficit with you. You got a lot to work off.
I gotta earn back the douchebag credits. Thank you, Christopher Titus.
When I think of courteous, there's a refreshing nature to this. People are like not used to people being courteous in some capacity. And I think, really, to be fair, if you look at where you're raised, masculinity has a whole different perspective and a whole different criteria when it comes to grading that. Like Southern gentleman is a thing. Nobody says, you know, California gentleman.
No one says California gentleman. No one says New York gentleman.
People expect narcissism. They expect vanity. They expect a lot of things when it comes to that. New York is, I don't have time to look at you, stop for you.
Right. Southern gentlemen, Southern bells.
Well, that's the thing is like courtesy and chivalry is regional, technically. I mean, I don't think it's ever stopped in the South, has it? Steve, where are you located, actually?
So right now I'm in Missouri, but I've lived in North Carolina and I've lived in South Carolina. I've also lived in Georgia. So yeah, but it goes back to the whole concept, Southern hospitality too. Like that's another concept too. So that like, there's just something about Southern hospitality and that I don't know what it is. They call it the Bible Belt. I don't know if it has to do with the Bible Belt. I don't know what it is, but I mean, yes. Southern gentlemen, Southern belles. I mean, but you know what? There's something attractive about a Southern belle. I am not going to lie. I have never attracted one. I've never been with one. A Southern belle, there's something very attractive about, you know, those shorts and the boots and the flannel.
The shorts and the boots?
Yeah. See, I think of Southern belle, like meet me in St. Louis kind of. Let's say if you're born and raised in the Midwest, like I was raised to be a gentleman. Okay. Mm-hmm. Masculinity never came up in the conversation. That word didn't come up, nothing else like that. But being a gentleman sort of had a certain criteria, right? It was being respectful. It was being respectful to others. It was being polite to others. It was being courteous. It was, you know, how to treat a woman and how to sort of conduct yourself in a way that is not only appropriate for society, but becoming someone who is, let's say, admirable. In that way. Mm. How do those qualities then relate back to masculinity? Because masculinity is kind of a semi-current topic, much like narcissism and, you know, gaslighting and love bombing and things that are now in the vernacular, right? Primarily due to podcasting, let's be fair, books and podcasting. But how do those sort of fit into the current role of what masculinity is evolving into?
So here's where I want to take that. And I don't profess this to be a full explanation or expert opinion, but I think there is a drastic difference between doing and being. And I think we've spent so much time defining masculinity and chivalry and courtesy in the lens of doing rather than through the lens of being. I think when we want to seek to define masculinity, when we want to define courtesy, when we want to define chivalry, it has to flow from who a person is rather than what a person does. Because again, this goes back to the whole performative nature. This goes can be touch on the it even being out of obligation and maybe out of a sense of duty, rather than, okay, if masculinity flows out of what I do rather than who I am, then I have missed the boat. If chivalry flows from what I do rather than who I am, then I have missed. I could open the door for you 10 out of 10 times. I could pull out your chair. I could pay for the bill. I could do all of these different things. But at the end of the day, chivalry and masculinity and courtesy, sometimes that they can be a facade. Sometimes they can be smoke and mirrors. Sometimes they can be a mask that we hide. And I think men can wear masculinity because of insecurity. Men can wear masculinity because of instability. Men can wear chivalry because they're trying to overcompensate. Since we are on Love Lust, you know, I'll keep my thoughts pure right now with what I was, where I was going to take that. But I think
you don't have to.
We'll keep the E. We would invite you to.
Well, yeah. I know where you're going, and please go.
You're trying to overcompensate for something else that might be deficient and might be lacking, and this, you're trying to portray the size of your character because the size of something else isn't where it needs to be.
So true.
And so, you know, you're trying to. It's like the scene from one of the Fast and Furious movies when he's like, "You better be packing a big gun, or you better be packing a big rock. And if you can't pack a big gun, or you better can't pack a big rock or provide a big rock, then you better be providing or you better be packing something else." And so that's a pop culture reference that I'm thinking of. But I think right now, masculinity is a mask that people wear and men hide behind. I think chivalry is a mask that can be hidden behind. I think courtesy, I think intentionality, because here's the thing, if it's not who you are, at the very core of your being, then it is nothing. It's all a facade. And at the end of the day, the rug's going to be pulled out from underneath it, right? The act, the curtain is going to come
stink. Down. You got to own your stink.
Well, can you be masculine and have stink at the same time?
Yes. I honest to God believe that you own your own stink. That makes you more of a more masculine. I mean, truthfully, I mean, owning your faults, owning your negatives and positives, like owning who you are, to me, can make you so much more masculine than you ever would have been if you hid behind the chivalry mask or you hid behind what you determined to be was a societal mask of masculinity. But sometimes that being vulnerable makes you love that man more and makes you cherish that man more and makes you respect who they are more.
You're talking about accountability, right? In terms of taking responsibility for that, which we've talked about is sort of the ingredients of that. And even Stephen, getting back to what you were talking about before, is that when you're in a position, and I've seen a lot of men go through this, they basically will start out, let's say I was chivalrous, I was courteous, I was all this, and it didn't work for me. So now
I'm negative.
Didn't
get me in the sack with them.
That's the thing. This is what Steven's talking about. It was very sort of transactionary. It was very like performative. And what you're finding is a lot of men, I tried it and it didn't work. So now I'm getting toxic. Now I hate all women. Now I'm becoming someone who is understanding that you've got to sort of protect yourself and you've got to sort of adapt to these ideology that is not necessarily healthy for themselves, but they're looking at it like this is a war, this is a battle now. But this is what you find too, right? You find a lot of men who they grow up thinking, well, I tried this. And as you said before, Michelle, it didn't get me laid. So now I'm going
to— Listen, that's like the, it didn't get me laid. And I hate to put it that bluntly, but it didn't get them their desired objective, whatever that desired objective was. And my thought as a woman, as if a man came to me and, well, it didn't work, didn't work, didn't work, like I would tell men, be who you are. If you are a kind, courteous person, don't change that to match what you think women want, because I can assure you not all women want the same thing. And there is, I've done divorce law for 24 years. There is someone for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. I also believe that who your person is may change through different, you know, times of your life. But if men just realize that it's not about fulfilling some stereotypical, this is what the movies portray women want, if they stop doing that and just were themselves, I think they would get a lot farther without the pretense. Because the pretense, I mean, it's going to go away anyways once you're in that relationship for any length of time. And if you're doing something that's not you, then you can't hold that forever. And that means a relationship ultimately won't work because you can't keep that facade forever. So you got to be you. And that applies to women too.
Stephen, you mentioned that you're now currently in a marriage that you're having struggle with, right? In terms of this, in terms of not really being certain of what the outcome is going to be at this point. When you look now at the future, and you talked about both you and Michelle see dating as a cringeworthy activity, how much time would you give yourself even before you remotely thought about dating again? Because I have another series I do called Loveless Fear. The original title was Let's Stay Single. And it was about me after a breakup thinking to myself, you know what? Why do I keep attracting these partners? I think I got to really look at myself. I got to look at what I'm doing, what I'm thinking, what I'm approaching, and who I'm letting into my life. So that was really the thing. And I took a couple years off and I said, you know what? I'm really going to work on myself. I'm going to read. I'm going to consult with other people, other guests. I do another podcast called Strictly Stalking, where we bring on stalking survivors who have dealt with a lot of the stuff in relationships. And it worked for me in a way. I mean, I still was duped a little bit in a previous relationship before my last breakup. My last breakup, she was amazing, by the way. It was just my having to work out some stuff in my own life. But that being said, is that how much time do you feel at this point? I know you're still in it too, so it's a little bit tough. You're like, maybe 25 years, like Michelle.
But maybe never.
Maybe never. Never. Half past never for both of you. But I'm just curious about you. Like, how much time do you think? Because you're actually somebody who's ahead of the curve when it comes to self-analysis and understanding your own, you know, as Michelle said, owning your stink.
Your own stink.
And but also understanding that the game and the playing field have changed. Okay. You're a lot more enlightened to things than you were before. So I'm just curious about that.
So the interesting thing is, part of why I started the conversations that I'm having is because I wanted to be a better husband, because she had two boys that I wanted to learn how to potentially be a better stepfather. So that's an added component. And so I've had these conversations because I wanted to begin a process of self-reflection and learning and growing so I could show up better in the marriage. And that's a part of the story that people that go to my Instagram won't really see. They won't really understand that. I mean, if you look at some of the reels, I've had marriage coaches that have been on. I had someone on that works with people that have survived affairs and adultery and all of these different things and what that process looks like. So I appreciate you saying that I am ahead of the curve in a way. I mean, I don't think I am, if I'm being truthful. Here's what I will say to answer your question. I don't think that there is a set time limit, because I think it's on an individual basis. It's on a case-by-case basis. I've been asking myself the question of, okay, when will I be ready? And here's the thing. If what I'm doing is solely for the purpose of being ready for the next person, then I have missed the point, right? Because then I'm making it all about them and less about me. And at that point, then now all I'm doing is trying to please the next person that I'm with. And I don't even know who that's going to be, right? Now I'm performing for them, and that's not going to bode well. I've been in relationships, two distinct relationships, including this current one, where it has been entirely performance driven. And so if I try and put an expiration on that, if I try and put a timeline on that, then I can rush the process and I can try and come out of the process a little too quickly. And here's the thing. I don't know if there's a defining moment or a critical moment where you all of a sudden realize, you know what, I am okay to date. Because let me say it this way. I thought I was ready to date when I got myself in this relationship and got in this marriage. I thought I had healed, past tense. I thought I was good, quote unquote, but yet I quickly realized when I got in the relationship that there was still a lot of work that I had to do. And there's still work that I'm doing right now. So to answer your question, I think I would do myself a tremendous disservice to myself if I focus, number one, on being ready to date again, number two, knowing when I was capable of dating again, and focus less on what type of man do I want to be for me? Because at the end of the day, it really makes no difference the timing or the time frame. None of that matters. It's all about perspective and it's all about clarity. And like I said, each person's story is different. You know, someone might, it might only take 6 months and you're good to go and you're ready to date and you'll be great. And you may find your person, get married, live happily ever after. And great, you know, c'est la vie. But then there's other people that may not be their story. And so I think, again, and I'm just going to reiterate it, is focus so much on the work, focus on the journey, focus on the process rather than the destination, rather than the timing. Eliminate the timing, eliminate the destination, eliminate the outcome. Completely strike them from your mind, because if you focus more on that than the journey and the process that you're in, you're going to miss what actually needs to be done.
So here's my question is, you, because of, you know, the people you talk to in your podcast and kind of your discovery of self journey, where's the first place you would tell someone who wants to go down the same path that you've gone down? Like, where should they start?
With themselves, first and foremost, honesty with themselves and being willing to dive deep. I think that that's where it started for me, right? It started for me because I was honest. Is your question more along the lines of how to get started or how to choose the right people to interact with?
So it's, well, it was really, it could be multifold, because one, I agree, you've got to take like an inventory, right? You have to do a personal inventory of, and get real with yourself about, here's where I'm screwing up. Here are my issues. Here are my concerns. But like, do you recommend they go to counseling? And we understand that you're not a therapist. You're not anything else, but you're a person and a man in particular that's gone on this journey. So what actual like books, podcasts, tools did you use to start with to start you on this journey? Because I think other men may want to start the journey.
Podcasts, yes, but podcasts are still limited in their capacity. And I say that as someone that, you know, is still working on launching my own. So they're limited in their scope. They're limited in their effect. They're not foolproof. Books are great. They'll give you an education. Reading, you know, you can read all the self-help books. You can do all that. Counseling and therapy are great. I mean, I see a counselor once a week, and here's what I found. Here's what's worked for me. Counseling has done very little for me. Podcasts, listening to them, they've been great. I've gleaned some wisdom. I've been able to take some notes. I've learned some things. I've been able to get some content to talk about in my conversations. They're great. What's really been beneficial for me is the community aspect, is having the conversations, because there are things that can take place in community. If you're a man with other men, if you're a woman with other women, that you cannot get from listening to a podcast or reading a book or going to counseling, because counseling is what, once a week and maybe an hour and a half. It's limited in its scope. It's limited in its effect. And I think here's one thing that I would suggest, and Michelle, you work with divorces. I would suggest, in addition to a couple that may be wanting to go through counseling to try and repair or salvage their marriage, I would want to encourage them to really explore the element of community. Get yourself involved with other couples. As a man, get yourself involved with other men. As a woman, get yourself involved with other women. Build yourself a community around you individually. Have a community around yourselves together. And again, that's not foolproof. It's not going to necessarily save the marriage. But that's where I'm at right now, where books are great. Counseling is great. Honestly, I don't put as much stock in counseling and therapy as other people do. I put more stock in community than I do counseling.
I can understand why for lots of reasons. And I also think sometimes, like at least for men, it may be easier for them to express themselves in a community where it's of like-minded men. So that makes sense. But Stephen, I got to tell you, one, I'm so glad we kind of connected through Instagram. This has been just an amazing and enlightening conversation that I'm assuming we will continue down the road. But for our listeners, where can they find you?
So the best thing to do is to find me on Instagram. So the handle is Full Disclosure Conversations. The ultimate goal is to put the podcast and the conversations on all the streaming platforms, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. That's the ultimate goal. My personal Facebook page, you can obviously look me up, Stephen Goodwin. My page is public. I've got nothing to hide. So you can look me up on Instagram at Full Disclosure Conversations, or you can send me a message on Facebook, Stephen Goodwin. And those are probably the two best avenues that anyone can find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you for spending part of your day with us today. I know Jake and I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Love, Lust, Law. Want to reach out to find more about what's going on with me? You can follow me across social media platforms at Attorney Michelle Locke. You can also send me an email at hello@michellelocke.com. Just remember Michelle's with one L, and you can thank my mother, Margot, with no T for that. Have a great one.